All right, Luke Wilson will join us here in about 5 minutes. Darren Dreger, Hockey Insider, later in the hour. Dave Feshuk of the Star in here. Noodles calling a game tonight. Ottawa back in action. So he's calling a game tonight. Noodles will be back on the show tomorrow. And we're just talking about our fitness levels and what we can maybe do to try to get the heart rate going. And we've got some ideas. We were throwing around some ideas. And our buddy Dan Quinn just sent me a text saying, you know what you got to do is pull the Babcock and come in sweating and panting. Dude, right before you do the press with everyone.
I almost forgot that from my memory haze, and you brought it up because he apparently there. I talked to, I know everybody down at the rink, and they like the stories start coming out after he leaves, right?
Right.
Where he would like run by people and he'd be like, "Hey, what time is it? How long have I been running?" And they had to like say, "Oh, you know, it's 12 o'clock." It's just, and he had to like every time he addressed the media, he had to be dripping sweat and panting just to let everybody know that he took the fitness. I don't know. It was just one of those things that you look back on. It's like, and if you couldn't figure it out at the time, you're just dumb. But it was that was part of his act, man. That was part of his routine.
Yep. Fast check. You would have been in those. You would have been down there for a lot of those scrums.
Yeah, no, he was, it did come off as a vanity workout. Like, I'm working out, so you know I'm working out. Not because I really care about working out. I just want the world to think I work out a lot, right? Because what he'd do is he'd just go running around the arena. Like, he'd run around the concourse. And he didn't go for a long workout because practice was over. He'd go for a little run, and then he'd meet the media after we'd talk to the players. It couldn't be more than 20 minutes. It wasn't exactly like, you know, Iron Man training he was doing, but he wanted you to think he was, right?
Right.
So, oh, that was Babcock.
It's such a contrast. Like, Randy Carlyle would just come out, and his hair would be everywhere. Randy would be like, all right, what are we doing? You know, let's have a chat. You look at Bruce Boudreau. Bruce, he's got the best – you know, gear going, and he's not, no one else in the league is doing it but Babcock. I can't think of, like, Sheldon Keefe has, I think, handled himself really well in terms of the media, in terms of it being his first experience in the NHL. Like, you wouldn't really know it, considering that was a big part of the conversation when he was hired, was he is not familiar with coaching in the NHL, and you're throwing him into a big pond here. You're asking him to take over for Babcock in Toronto when the Leafs are on fire like they were a couple of years ago.
Big stage, man.
Big stage. And I think he's handled it well, and I think he's picked his spots well. I think, like, last night, I don't know if he had a game plan, like, before he met with the media, but it does kind of seem like that was an opportunity for him to take a little jab at his team, because in Colorado, where I didn't think they played well, and in particular the third period, they got their doors blown off against the Avs. Like, they were lucky to get a point. It was a miracle they got a point. And he came out and decided at that point, okay, let's be optimistic here. And he said, I'm choosing to see the positives in this game. I like where we're at. That's a really good team. And who cares if we blew a 4-1 lead? In Vegas, I think he was somewhat pragmatic as well. And then last night, they lost 2-1. And you don't—it's embarrassing to lose to the worst team in the league at any point, regardless of the context. We established that earlier this hour, or this afternoon, but that wasn't even close. Like, that was not even close. They dominated that game last night.
He wasn't happy. That goalie doesn't have the night of his life, Hayes. That's 6-1 all day long.
Easily, Matthews could have had 4 last night in his
on his own.
Yeah, on his own. And Vemelka stands on his head.
Never heard of the guy.
Dzingel pots too, where he was almost as surprised as everyone else was. Like, he's like, all right,
well, yeah,
I guess it
was. I mean, the second one, that was Mrazek trying a crazy poke check. He didn't even need to try, and he admitted it as much later on, saying, I could have just stood there and stopped an easy shot, but I decided to poke check and I let one in. So, but he hadn't played in a month, so you give him that leash, you know.
Yeah, and Keefe wasn't ecstatic with his game, though, right? Like, he did kind of contradict himself a little bit, where he did say it's his first start and it's. But he's like, you'd like a save. You know, you'd like a save there. And I think he said specifically the second one, you'd definitely like a save there, because he wasn't tested at all, man. There were there were 4 or 5 chances for Arizona. They had no pressure, no cycling. They never had the Leafs back on their heels at any point in the game. I heard Al's brother reference on the lunch the offensive time with the puck on your stick. The Leafs had like 11 minutes plus. Arizona had like 2 minutes in the Leafs zone last night through 60. That is a discrepancy you don't see very often. And they outshot them by 30 plus, and they lost the game. But Sheldon Keefe decided, I think, knowing, okay, It's Arizona. People are asleep. We're off tomorrow. Let's take a little jab. And that's part of coaching as well, like inspiring, keeping guys on their toes, understanding now the second half of this trip is going to be tough, right? Like they got a point in Colorado, two in Vegas, but now you're at St. Louis, and they got the Rangers coming up at the Garden, the Islanders, who are getting back to healthy, and I think are going to return in the second half to looking closer to the team that we've seen for the last 3 or 4 years under Barry Trotz. It's not going to be an easy roadie the rest of the way.
And I think at practice tomorrow, there might be a conversation between the coach and the captain saying, you got to be better. You got to – this hasn't been a favorable road trip for him. It's just – he's not been good. He's got to be better.
Well, he might be someone that Keith was talking about with the conditioning, because Tavares had COVID, was the first one, I believe. It was him and Spezza, and was out, you know, and – John Tavares is the epitome of a professional. I don't think he's going to intentionally let himself go or anything like that. But
he's got to play better.
He's got to play better. And he's not a burner anyway, but when he loses just a half step, and you see it at times, it comes in waves, it's a bigger half step than the average player when you're already a guy that just gets there and does enough to be a high-octane performer like he is. Because you're right, Tavares has really not played that well at any point on this trip. He has not been an impact player on this trip. So we'll get to that more coming up. Darren Dreger in about 20 minutes. Bart Scott had some advice for Josh Allen earlier today. Before we get to the audio, why don't we bring in our boy, longtime NFL Super Bowl champ, our TSN NFL analyst. Here's Luke Wilson. What's happening, Luke?
Not much. We got to go there, don't we, man? You got to put me on the spot.
You know it's coming, man. You know it's
right
coming.
Right off the gate. Right out of the gate, buddy.
Yeah, it's fastballs. No question. Fastballs here. Well, let me play the audio, okay? So Josh Allen, because I want to – let me, before we play the audio, let me ask you about the fact that Allen went on the record saying he's got circulation issues and he gets cold and his feet get cold and his toes get cold. Like, what kind of message is that sending? Do you have any issue with him going public with that truth?
You know, I don't know if I have an issue with it, but I find it very, very, very strange in the sense of, like, you got to think, and maybe Buffalo's running a different operation in Seattle. Our equipment guys in Seattle were like wizards, man. Like, have you ever had an actual issue like that? Like, hey, I'm really struggling. I've got this, or my toes are freezing. These guys will find, like, you know, I'm laughing thinking about it, but it's like, if that's the issue with your toes, like, I've been doing a little bit of road cycling recently. And there's, like, toe covers you can put over cycling cleats. Like, there's things you can do to combat these issues. So I thought that whole thing was just bizarre. I'm like, what is this guy talking about right now? And he can't seriously blame poor play in the cold on his toes being cold. That's absurd.
Yeah, that's not – and that just isn't going to play in Buffalo. Like, he's a rock star in Buffalo, as he should be. He's a great young quarterback. And he won them a playoff game for the first time in – over 20 years last year. And I think they're going to win on Saturday night. I like the Bills. But if they don't and he doesn't perform well, this is going to be all over Buffalo. Like, over. What's up with him? Can he perform in the playoffs when it gets cold? So Bart Scott was on ESPN this morning. And this is what Bart Scott had to say to Josh Allen. This was his suggestion to get over the issues that he's dealing with.
Can I get you a suggestion for him?
You want me
Josh to- Allen listening? Can people get this message to him? Viagra. Take some Viagra for the game, baby. That'll fit that circulation going right.
I don't know how to move off of that.
I don't have any medical background, so I can't. I don't really have a response to that. But you play, so you must know something.
A lot of us take Viagra, right? Because Viagra opens up the blood vessels.
A lot of us take Viagra. What do you mean?
A lot of NFL players, at least in my day, took Viagra because it opens up the blood vessels. A lot of endurance athletes, because Viagra was first a heart medicine, right? So it builds up circulation, which makes sure that it gets the circulation to the feet.
I love how he grinds through the explanation. He's like, I'm committed to this.
I love how he also says the circulation to the feet. It's like, what? What, a guy's looking to get a toe on?
Exactly. Their toes, they got a date tonight, man.
I've got my toe on. I'm ready to go.
All right, Luke, take us inside the league, man. You played when Bart Scott was in the league. What's up with
this? And I feel like I've been pretty honest on the show.
Yeah.
You know, I've never heard of this. I wish I have, just so I can tell you something funny.
Okay.
I've never heard of it. If guys in Seattle's locker room were using that to stay warm, I mean, and to be honest, I was quite the character in that locker room. Like, really, you know, you spent a lot of time there. If I would hear about it, like, because someone would tell me so I could start ragging on them. And there's a lot, and to be honest with you, there's a lot of things that are being taken in that locker room before games. Trust me on that. Mm-hmm. Okay, not all of them legal, but I've never heard of that. That even today when I saw that clip, I'm like, that's bizarre. I'm not a doctor, but I'm not really sure that Viagra does what he's saying. I mean, theoretically, maybe, but I don't know. And I also think, you know, it's kind of a high risk, high reward situation, because if, you know, something else occurs, maybe as a the true effect of Viagra, that might be a little awkward.
No kidding.
Again, that one was a weird one. I will say that this whole thing is just, and I know I keep going back to it, but like, we played in Minnesota a couple years back. It was freezing. Like, you'd walk outside, if you had any like eyes that were watering, it would freeze, like as it was dripping down your face. And all I can tell you is, like, those benches on the sideline have heat coming from every direction. The thing that you put your helmet on the sideline is heated. I mean, those big jackets are super warm. Everybody that's watching an NFL game has seen those huge fans. You get too close to those fans, I'm worried I would catch on fire. They're so hot. So it's like, a lot of times in this NFL stuff, I don't truly get even the hand warmers. Now they have pouches inside the hand warmers, which we would load up with the little heat packs. You would shake the little, I don't know what they're called, but you'd shake these little packs and you put them in there. So inside the heat pack or more heat packs. So I just, even when we're in Green Bay, don't get me wrong, when you're on the field, is it a little chilly jogging out there? Sure, but, like, it's hard to really be cold, if that makes sense, because there's so many options to, like, keep you warm on the sideline.
You spent so much time in Seattle, and it's, like, a great environment there, one of the best home buildings in the NFL. But we were discussing Buffalo and a new stadium moving forward. Like, is it part of the deal for Buffalo or Green Bay to be playing in an outdoor stadium where you're freezing your ass off? Like, why not a dome that you can open up, close? And I know Dave Festchuk, who's on the show with us today, has mentioned that's $500 million extra to have that element to the stadium. But why wouldn't they have this? It's better for everybody, isn't it, Luke?
I disagree, man. I'll tell you, here's a quick one. This was probably my, I'm going to say third year, maybe fourth year. I can't remember, but we had played on the road in Green Bay, and either like the next week or maybe 2 weeks later went to Dallas. And as a football player, I remember thinking, like, talk about the yin and yang of football in stadiums. You go through Lambeau, you pull in, you're driving through the neighborhood. There's Brett Favre painted barns everywhere. Okay. And then you, all of a sudden comes Lambeau Field. Locker room is, you know, pretty generic. Nice is what it is. You walk through this tunnel underground that has, like, no paint, no anything, no advertising. It's just like a beige wall into this grass Lambeau Field. Outside, it's a little chilly. There's obviously advertisements, but nothing like too crazy. And then you go to Dallas, where we legitimately walk through a bar to get onto the field. And it's just like, at one point, there's not enough advertising, so they had blimps with advertising inside the stadium. And to me, it was just a circus. Like, I get what you're saying about weather and stuff, but I don't know. As a guy who's played football for a long time, even playing in Buffalo, and the only time I played in Buffalo was when I was in Detroit. And I'm like, I mean, the Bills fans were rowdy. It was outdoors. It was late in the year. It was cold. It just kind of adds, like, when I think of Buffalo Bills football, I think of kind of a brisk winter day and then playing ball, you know. And I would be, if they did do a new stadium with a dome, I'd be upset. I think it's a bad play, but that's my opinion.
So, well, the problem, Luke, of course, in Buffalo is that in a lot of ways it's a team built for warm weather playing in Buffalo, and certainly Josh Allen, a California quarterback, would be that guy. And then you look at the brisk winter day where the New England Patriots came to town a while back and beat the Bills by throwing the ball three times with their rookie quarterback, Mac Jones. I mean, if you're a Bills fan, how concerned are you that in this third matchup between these teams of this season, that the mastermind Bill Belichick comes up with a game plan that is going to be really good in cold weather and could beat the Bills?
Oh, if I'm a Bills fan, I'm terrified. And it's funny, I tried to get this out yesterday on Jay Onright's show, but I think that if you look at the NFL in a as a whole, it's very, very tough to beat teams twice. And I'm going to try and articulate this a little more simple, but why I say that is because the NFL, you know, we see it as fans as like, oh, this guy made a lot of plays, this guy didn't. But the reality is, I'd say out of all the professional sports, coaching matters the most in the NFL. You think of it, they call every play, they prepare guys, the studying beforehand. It's really a big-time chess game going on out there, and it's not a game like basketball or hockey that there's like a big-time flow. You know, it's very choppy. And why I'm saying that is, you know, you look at New England, they beat Buffalo, bam, game one. Now when they go back to prepare for game two, New England's sitting there playing the guessing game a little bit. Hey, we know Buffalo's not going to come out and play the same defense because we ran all over them. What Buffalo tried to do last time isn't going to work. So New England's, we call it chasing ghosts a little bit. When they're going into game two, they're chasing ghosts. If we think Buffalo's going to adjust like this, so let's prep for this. You know, and it's a little bit of a smorgasbord, if you will, of like what you're preparing for. Where if you're Buffalo, it's like, hey, New England just beat the living hell out of us running these 12 plays all week. We are going to, even if it's new, you know, defensive fronts, different blitz, different guys in their spots, we are going to stop these 12 plays. So they have something to really prepare for. And now all of a sudden you look at game two, Buffalo wins, and now the tables have kind of flipped where it's like Bill's going to be sitting back there, the mastermind Bill, like, hey, we know what beat them game one. If they do this, we've got all this in our repertoire. And I know how they now reacted to what we were trying to do. So he's going to have, in my opinion, a little bit more of an upper hand as far as preparation goes going into this game.
Luke, there's been so many changes with coaches getting fired from mediocre to bad teams. If you're a free agent, what would you need to see for a hire coming up? Let's talk about Houston or Miami or a team like that where it would catch your interest to, like for the new coach going in there. What would you need to see where you'd be like, I want to play for that guy. I know it's not a great team right now, but that guy will turn things around, and I'll go there. And I know you went to Detroit. You didn't have a ton of fun, but in this situation, you know, right now.
To be honest with you, I got a call from Matt Patricia when I was going to Detroit. I was sitting in my driveway in LaSalle, Ontario, and I had a three-year deal in Carolina. And I had called my agent and been like, yeah, I'm going to sign with Carolina. At the last minute, I think I was bamboozled, to be honest with you, by my agent, but we're not going to go there today. Okay. The last minute, he was like, hey, Bob Quinn's calling from the Lions. You know, there's a little more money on the table now. It's a one-year deal. And I got a call from Matt Patricia, and you said it, where it's like he was a guy where after that phone call, I was like, man, with his background, with this phone call, I just felt like he was going to turn around Detroit, and I was super excited to be a part of that, especially from a hometown perspective, being like, man, if I could be on the squad that Detroit finally turns around. We all know that didn't work out, but that was kind of my mentality. So as a
bro,
player,
you had 3 years in Carolina. What were you thinking?
I mean, you're going to laugh, but part of the allure was Greg Olsen was in Carolina still, and I'm like, I had just, you know, I had played – you know, now we're going down personal here. I'm sorry that I've gone this tangent. But my second year, I had started in Seattle, and we went right to Super Bowl and lost in the final second, obviously. And I thought I had a pretty good year, you know, statistically. I thought I did a very good job blocking. And in that offseason, we traded for Jimmy. And my numbers, you know, I thought my play elevated, but my numbers didn't, because it was like now, you know, third down, red zone, I'm not tight end in there like the year before. So I sat there and I'm like, all right, I could take this deal where now all of a sudden I'm playing the same role that I played for Jimmy, for Greg Olsen, or I could go to Detroit and fight to be the man over there. And that's kind of why I rolled the dice. At that point, I was like, you know, money-wise aside, like, let's not play it safe. Of course, with my dumb luck, Greg Olsen broke his foot, never played for the entire season. And Detroit was the absolute biggest bloodbath of my entire life. But that's neither here nor there now.
Right.
But I guess going back to the coaching thing, I think, you know, and I was actually in a group chat. I'm not going to say with who, but a couple guys that are free agents. We were talking about this. And organizationally, and you see like a lot of these coaches that, hey, you last 1 year, you last 2 years. And it's just there's a lot of very poor coaches in the NFL. And there's a lot of guys that, you know, they get a perception and they're perceived to be smart or good. And all of a sudden the media takes off and it's kind of a lot. It's very political. Like, who do you know? Who's suggesting you?
How do they get recycled, though, Luke? Like, how do they not go to an interview and someone says, this is nonsense. I'm not buying this. I'm not hiring this guy. And furthermore, giving him a boatload of money.
Oh, I can answer that one easy. I can answer that one really easy. And it's the same way about the NFL draft. And it's wild. And this is why you don't see a ton of NFL players coming back. And the guys that do coach, they usually do pretty well. And the answer is because everybody's scared to be fired. And what I mean by that is, and why I'm comparing to the draft, is basically if you're a GM and you're hiring a coach, and it's like, hey, I can go and get this guy who's gone 9-7 in this league, who's gone 10-5, who's gone 7-9. It's a safe hire. No one's going to sit here and be like, hey, this is really, really risky. This guy's won games. Yeah, he might not have won the Super Bowl, but he's won games in the NFL. He's been a head coach. We can trust him. We can trust him from a media perspective. There's no skeletons in his closet. I'm not going to get fired. But then all of a sudden you get the odd guy that doesn't give a damn and is like, listen, the media might dump on me for a little bit, but I think this guy's going to take my team to the Super Bowl. And they're going to have to take some heat early because it's like, yo, this guy's underqualified or whatever. But they take a shot, and now as a GM, you're kind of stuck with this guy where it's like, if the guy doesn't turn out, you're getting canned because you're the guy who took the risk. And I say the same thing with the NFL draft. If you look at, like, these middle-round guys, you know, it's always a lot of, like, if you're a scout and you come in there, let's say you're a low-end scout, you're a regional guy, and you go into your head honchos and you're like, hey, let's say, we're just going to use me, for example. If I'm a low-end, kind of low totem pole scout, and I'm out in Southeast Texas or something, I go to some low-end D1 school or D1 AA school, and I'm like, damn, this kid's a stud. I think this kid can play in the league for 10 years. If I come into that meeting, and I'm like, yo, this kid can play in the league for 10 years, but no one knows about him, versus, hey, this other guy, he's okay. He's maybe a 3-4-year guy, but everybody knows about him because he's playing at Texas. Like, you tell me, are you willing to stick your neck on the line for the kid who's playing at Prairie View A&M? Over the kid who's playing at Texas? I mean, it kind of depends on the person. And I think that's why these coaches get recycled, because the people in power are very afraid that if they go, you know, outside of the box, they're going to be responsible if things don't work out.
Yeah, I think that's very accurate. And it's probably a sign of exactly what we're going to see in the next month or so. A lot of retreads, a lot of guys coming in, getting gigs, 9-7, 6-10, 7-9, see you later, move on. Anyway, it's going to be a fun weekend this weekend. 6 games in total. We'll break it all down with you next weekend. Can't wait for it. Enjoy it, buddy. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
Appreciate you guys.
Luke Wilson, our TSN NFL analyst. Super Bowl champ, former Seattle Seahawk, Detroit Lion, Oakland Raider for a short period of time as well. So it's always great to get Luke on. And he brings up a good point, like the draft. Maybe it's what we just talked about a little bit earlier this week with Bron Hextall, Bobby Clark, although that's the top of the draft. But like Nolan Patrick, everyone knew you'd take him second overall.
Mm-hmm.
Like, or go against the mock drafts and take Kale McCarr.
Or right? What about the year Lafreniere? Did anyone not say they must have tossed it around, but it's like, I know he's number one, but why don't we take Jamie Drysdale?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why don't we have some stones here and just say this guy – because if you look at the way they're projecting only a year later or a year and a half or whatever they're doing, Lafreniere looks like he's going to be a 15 to 20 goal guy playing third line left wing.
Yeah, he does.
And Jamie Drysdale looks like he's going to be an elite, elite defenseman that controls the game for 25 minutes a night. Big difference, man. But you got to have the stones to pull it off.
Big time.
I don't think it would have taken huge stones because Jamie, like, if you, I watched Jamie Drysdale play a lot for that 0-2 Marlies team, you know, growing up because my kid was kind of near his age group. And, you know, like, and I knew the coach pretty well, and like, he was such a gifted skater. Like, you don't see guys like, you can be in a lot of hockey arenas and never see somebody skate like that for a lot of years, man. And it, to me, it wouldn't have been a huge leap to take him number one.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't, what did he go, sixth, I think, in the draft? Yeah, let me look it up. Yeah, he went number six. So, but you got Lucas Raymond that went fourth.
Yeah, no kidding. Sanderson, the Sanderson kid, like.
Yep. Yep, exactly. That, well, that's when you wonder if Ottawa, like, who knows? Jake Sanderson hasn't made it yet, but you took Sanderson over Drysdale.
The greatest example of all, Hayes, the minus 30 at the No Balls Open, was the Ottawa Senators just climbing into bed with Alexander Daigle, and they're like, this is our guy no matter what.
Right.
And they let Chris Pronger go, and they let Paul Kariya and all of those guys, and it was like, that's our guy no matter what. It's like, you didn't take Chris Pronger? Like, are you high?
Perfect example, yeah. Daigle was the guy in Quebec putting up
French
Mario
Canadian
numbers.
And... Yeah, oh yeah, and it's like, no matter what, he's our guy. It's That's nonsense, man.
It is, and listen, this is a way too early reaction and projection, but I'm looking at the 2020 draft right now. Lafreniere went first. Quentin Byfield went second. That was the draft where Ottawa had two picks in the top five. They took Stützle number three. Lucas Raymond went number four. They took Sanderson number five. Drysdale went number six. I would not be shocked if in 10 years we're looking at it. Raymond's a guy who's an all-star every year in Detroit. Drysdale's up for the Norris. And you know, who knows, Stützle and Sanderson, they're top five picks for a reason. They're huge talents. You got to give them time. You got to give them a lot of time. But if you missed on both and the guys that went directly after you light it up, playing the same positions more or less, that one's going to sting for Ottawa. That'll sting. But and that gets back to what Tyson Nash had to say yesterday, where we had Nash on, and he's like, Arizona's got all these picks. They can't miss. You can miss.
You can miss.
You can miss. You can absolutely miss.
They got Fergie, though. Don't worry about it.
Fergie's down there, though. That'll help. That'll help. All right, Darren Dreger, Hockey Insider, coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, Raptors back in action tomorrow night. The Leafs are back in action in St. Louis on Saturday. Super Bowl right around the corner. We got the Super Wild Card Weekend this weekend, so we look forward to that. And this Evander Kane news, I guess it's on hold right now, while the league continues to investigate what was going on with him and flying to Vancouver, among other things. And here's our TSN Hockey Insider, Darren Dreger. What kind of holdup do you expect here, Dregs, and when does the levy break and Evander Kane sign somewhere?
Well, as Chris Johnson reported on Insider Trading, it may take a couple of days. Now, you know, he can sign at whatever point he wants. He can sign immediately if he likes. But that doesn't mean that he's going to be cleared to return to the NHL. And that's what the ongoing investigation is about from a National Hockey League perspective. And there's all kinds of speculation as to what the level of punishment will be or might be. But honestly, we're all guessing. We have no idea other than the fact that he was suspended for a very lengthy period of time prior to that. So we're all waiting anxiously to see, first, the NHL investigation end, ultimately what the punishment is, and maybe before then, a team like the Oilers steps up and signs him.
Well, what do you think about this Oilers idea, Dregs? I mean, can this, as desperate as they are, as hamstrung by the cap as they are in terms of trading, is this maybe something that Kenny Holland sees as maybe one of his only options to try and shake things up on a club that needs some shaking up?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly it, Dave. And, you know, if you look at it and you know, this is easy for me to do and maybe less easy for Holland or anyone else to separate the two. If you look at it purely from a hockey perspective, Evander Kane could help the Edmonton Oilers in a very significant way. You know, he can skate, he can score. You know, he's got the attributes of today's version of a power forward. So if you can keep him motivated, keep him focused, and keep him, you know, in tune with what's best for the team, then there's a lot to like about the idea of bringing Evander Kane into the mix. And you're only committed to him for a short period of time, right? And the dollars aren't going to be limited. You know, they could creep up to 175 prorated, something like that. But there doesn't appear to be a risk in it from an Oilers standpoint when you look at it that way. If you can't separate and you look at all the baggage that comes with Evander Kane, well, then you probably shouldn't engage in the first place. But I think it is because of the limited options and the needs that Ken Holland can see that he still has with his lineup.
With Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider, we're talking about, I guess, the conversation or the Zoom call between the league and the province of Quebec. And I don't know if the premier was on it. I don't know if the commissioner was on it. But higher-ups between the league and the province of Quebec and the push to get a team back in Quebec City. And I guess the NHL basically said, we're swiping left. Like, we're not interested right now. We're not coming up. like, does this just continue to happen every couple of years? Quebec just lobbies a pitch and the NHL keeps shooting it down? Or what's going on here?
Yeah, that's basically it, Brian. And I'm okay with that, too, right? I'm thinking back to, you know, it was a way more volatile time when the Atlanta Thrashers were in existence and, you know, they were looking for new ownership and things were going sideways. And Mark Chipman, who's now one of the main owners, of course, of the Winnipeg Jets, we all knew at that point that Chipman and company were interested in acquiring an NHL franchise. But Chipman went about it in a very quiet way and just kind of sat back, had constant communication with Gary Bettman and the National Hockey League head office. And then all of a sudden they decided that, look, it's not viable in Atlanta anymore. We've got this team sitting right there, new building, ready to roll here. Why not give it a go? And it happened that quickly. So relocation makes the most sense. But we also know how loath Bettman and company are to do that. I'm not connecting the Arizona Coyotes to Quebec City. I mean, that's been done dozens of times to this point, but they continue their wrestling matches with, you know, Glendale and trying to figure out a new arena site and all of those things. That's probably why Quebec continues to express interest. And, you know, they're not screaming from the mountaintops here. They're going about their business in a very quiet and I would say politically correct fashion. It was Bettman and Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly who acknowledged that they were meeting with the Quebec government officials during the Board of Governors meeting. So they let the cat out of the bag. So this is more follow-up by Quebec.
Darren, the Canadian teams have had some games postponed here. They're playing on the road. They're doing whatever they're doing. Who from the NHL and who are they calling from Canada saying, okay, what the hell's going on here? Because sooner or later, they got to get back playing home games, and they want people in the building. So what is going on behind the scenes with this nonsense?
Nah, buddy, it's a tough one. And look, you know, I'm sure the National Hockey League is connected with government officials, both at the federal basis and, you know, then you look provincially. And likewise for the teams. You know, I just mentioned Mark Chipman in Winnipeg. Well, I'm sure he's got fairly substantial provincial government contacts. And likewise for the Toronto Maple Leafs here in Ontario, the Ottawa Senators, go down the list. And is there lobbying taking place? Probably not, but there's constant communication. I believe that to be the case. But until the restrictions are lifted, then the government, provincially and federally, just aren't going to back off. And at some point, you know, if that doesn't happen soon and fans are allowed in some capacity to return to these buildings, well, of course the NHL is going to have a huge financial issue, right? I mean, again, going back to that Board of Governors meeting, you know, they were crowing about how happy they are that they're ahead of schedule in recovering hockey-related revenue. And that meant good things for the future of ESCO from a player perspective. And the fact that the salary cap is going up, all these wonderful things. And then 10 days later, kaboom, you know, Omicron hits and the world is upside down as the NHL knows it. So, you know, what we know is that teams are playing in unfair circumstance. They just are, and they're trying to muddy through. You know, you look at the lineup that is on the ice for the Winnipeg Jets tonight against the Detroit Red Wings. I mean, I can tell you by 3 o'clock this afternoon, the Jets weren't sure they were going to be able to put a team on the ice because they were waiting for additional test results to do that. So that's all part of the problem. But the bigger issue, of course, is coming, and that's going to be the number of games that need to be played in a relatively short period of time if they're not willing to extend the season by at least a week.
With Darren Dreger, our TSN Hockey Insider. So it sounds as if Mitch Marner, Pierre Engvall will join the trip with the Leafs, and that would make you believe they'll be in the lineup come Saturday night. And if Rasmus Sandin couldn't play last night based on cap issues, how do you slide in $11 million
I know.
From Mitch. And what is it, 1-3, 1-4 from Pierre Engvall? How's this going to work for the Leafs?
Yeah, it's got to be a complicated one. Asked that question today, didn't get a response. So maybe there is some head scratching and pencil sharpening that's going on as we speak. But look, you know, it's not the first rodeo for Kyle Dubas or teams that struggle with the salary cap, and managing it is just part of their daily routine in terms of a management group. And Toronto definitely has the staff to wrestle with all of this, but it's potentially going to be a challenge. It's certainly something that I'm interested to see how they make it work.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well,
no
yeah. Kidding. Well, what are their options there, Dregs? I mean, like, yeah. this is not a normal situation. Are you surprised that the league hasn't kind of loosened the shackles to some degree for the capologists, you know, like the Leafs, Brandon Pridham, in this moment, either to have a little more freedom to bring guys in and out, or you kind of money being as short as it is, I guess they don't want to be spending more if it's not necessary.
Yeah, that's probably more of it. You know, again, it would separate to some degree the haves versus the have-nots. And I'm reminded of, you know, the Ottawa Senators not that long ago. COVID hit that organization so heavily that they didn't have that many bodies left in Belleville to bring up. So where were they getting them from? Now, that doesn't apply to the Leafs in this case, and it doesn't apply to most teams across the NHL. But, yeah, I'm a bit surprised. And, look, I mean, they reluctantly brought back the taxi squad. And even the rules that govern how you utilize the taxi squad are different than the original adoption of the taxi squad. It's basically on an emergency basis only. So I'm a bit surprised that they haven't done more to loosen some of the restrictions around that.
Yeah, it's just a juggling act day in, day out, right?
Really
like
is.
A month ago, we were, the ACC or Scotiabank was a full house.
Yeah.
And now it's not. No one's in there. So how do you predict, how do you prepare for 2-3 months down the road?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
It's wild, and you guys probably feel the same way. Rick Ferraro and I were having this conversation yesterday. It's tough to get a feel on the games in the league, isn't it? Because, you know, they almost seemingly don't feel like they matter. It's like we can't Weird. Get to the start of the postseason fast enough because of how disjointed the schedule is, and this game's postponed. Well, we don't know when they're going to play that one. I mean, everyone's schedule is in upheaval, including our own, but it's taking the feel of the regular season completely away.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, and Ray kept saying that the last couple of nights.
Yeah.
Trying to get a read on a streak, when it goes back a month and a
Possible.
Half or 2 months, and like Matthews is a part of it right now. I guess the streak started when he was in L.A., like that game in L.A. That feels like 2 years ago.
Like 2 months ago.
It does.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah, exactly. But you shut it down for a few weeks, including on a road trip when they were supposed to play in Calgary, and the rest is history at this point, I guess. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll find out. I guess they'll get through it, and eventually we will get to the playoffs, and hopefully it'll be a packed house when that day comes. Thank you, buddy. Always appreciate it.
Okay, guys. Have a great night.
Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider. Yeah, it's tough to track. It's the same thing in the NBA where they're just throwing anything they can against the wall, get games going, get them in. The league is telling you the regular season is a formality. Like, you've got TV deals, radio deals, endorsement deals. You've sold tickets. You got to go. You got to play. You got to do it. And hopefully you wake up in April when the playoffs are going to begin and we're in a much better place and everything's all good and everyone's healthy and people are through COVID protocols and you don't have to worry about it, because it feels like the NFL is kind of – they're through it, right? Like, they're into the playoffs and there's a couple guys who are coming either off the COVID list, maybe a couple going on, but nothing significant going into the weekend.
I know. The way they're scheduling is they've kind of – I don't know. It seems like they've hit the jackpot with certain things. Like, they're just like, okay, we're going to wrap things up here. We'll have the Super Bowl in a month, and we'll let you guys all deal with COVID. And I don't know. It's almost like the best way to operate. Just like, we're going ahead here. We're moving ahead. People go to games, and then we're done, and you can stop talking about us. I'm not going to say whether it's right or wrong, but I have an appreciation for it.
Oh, they don't care.
They just
exactly.
Yeah, they just do their own thing. It's like, we're going to be normal. We're having games, and you can go to the games, and that's it. And like I said, I don't want any tweets. But that's just how they operate. And it's like everybody's having a good time and they're going to football games.
The NFL, just implemented those new rules. You know, they were the first ones to do it, really, to be like, all right, we're not doing this, we're not doing that. If you're asymptomatic, come back. And they got blowback for like 48 hours, and then everyone went somewhere else and started talking about Djokovic in Australia or whatever.
Yeah, key to that comment, they're first to have the balls to do it.
Yes.
First to have the stones to do that.
They did it.
Everyone else was like, oh, my God, you can't do that.
Yeah. Well,
Roger Goodell just says, we're doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I think it's Roger Goodell. I think it's guys like Jerry Jones. I think it's, you know, some pretty ballsy owners for sure. That are not afraid to, and also it's the political situation down there too, right? Like the just pretending COVID doesn't exist is like it's like an official position of a very good portion of the population, certainly of politicians, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just been the way it's been, and we just don't have that up here in the same kind of numbers.
No, we don't, and. We'll see. I guess the kids are going back to school on Monday. Again, I'll believe it when I see it on Monday. But as of now, that's the plan. And I guess Dr. Moore said today that there's no guarantees as of, I think, January 23rd. That was when they were planning to kind of gear things back up again, that's actually going to happen. And they're going to ease back into it, which we all knew. That's the playbook. That's what the province has been doing for 2 years. They don't just pull the lever and say, all right, forget it. You know, the curtain's up again. Let's go. It'll be for capacity purposes down at Scotiabank. I'm sure they'll start with 1,000 people, then it'll be 2,500, then 5,000, then 10,000. And I think by playoff time, though, you got to hope we're packed house and everything's all good. That's still a few months down the road. We'll come back and recap a busy afternoon. Look ahead to tomorrow, where Alice Brothers going to be on the clock. You and Team Out Dog, we got 3 games apiece. Super Wild Card weekend.
And clean slate.
Clean slate. More importantly, a clean slate. That's what really matters. And we're tracking the Sony Open down
in
Hawaii.
Give it to me. Give me some leaderboard.
Jim Furyk.
I almost took him. Don't tell me he's leading.
He shot a 62. He's in the clubhouse at 8-under alone. 62 tonight. He had an ace.
Stretch there. Birdie, ace coming in.
I love it. Take that, Tiger. Tiger's chirping him for not being athletic. Jim Furyk's
out
there.
Dude, if you play golf with that guy, Hazy, he drives a golf ball the same distance you do. But I'll tell you what, that guy can grab a 3-hybrid and stuff it to 2 feet.
Well, hits it like a wedge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where me, I'm sculling it, and it's a mess. Very different game.
No, it's a different game.
Very different game.
In.
So we'll get you up more of updates in terms of our picks and where they currently stand, because that's really all that matters. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050, and on the TSN app. All right, it's been a fun one today. Nick Nurse joining us. We had a great chat with Luke Wilson, our buddy, Carlo Colaiacovo, Darren Dreger. You can find everything online, tsn.ca, tsn1050.ca, iHeartRadio app, the whole nine. Download the podcast. It's always a good one. And the Leafs coming off a loss last night. The Raptors are back in action tomorrow night. The Leafs will be back on Saturday, and the Sony Open's cooking. And Jim Furyk, he was 8-under today. Hole in one. Remember, we had Furyk on over a year ago, I guess, and he had one of those horror stories where he said he had a hole in one when he was younger playing by himself. And obviously, it's not something that hindered his improvement or his.
Dude, it's something that if you ever did it, you would have such a difficult time because people in the back of their mind would be like, I got to be honest, Hayes, if you just called me in the spring and said I got a hole-in-one, O-Dog, and I was by myself, I'd be like, I don't know.
I don't know if you believe me. I hear you. And even if it happened and I was being honest with you, I'd hang up the phone knowing you hung up and said,
"This guy's
no
a fraud.
Chance, dude. You're an idiot."
And a lot of people, I guess what they do when it happens is you call the pro shop and you're like, can you send somebody out here? I just hit a shot. But the idea of driving up to the green and dropping it in and going back, I don't know. It's just
it's one of
those things.
Yeah. I don't believe it when I see online. You see pictures on Instagram or whatever where two guys in the same group had a hole in one. I'm like, I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all. good for you. You took a picture beside the pin. Anyone can do that. It's not believable. You need a witness. You need a witness to hit a hole-in-one. And I've never had one, so it would be even more, difficult to believe if I told you I got one when no one was around. So, but again, Furyk said he had 15 or something when he was a kid. He's got 6, I think, on tour. He just got one again this afternoon. So, it's all good out in Hawaii. Our picks are doing okay. I'm not seeing anyone really crushing it right now. I got Billy Horschel at 5-under. That's not bad.
This Sony Open seems like some guy that you just – it's either the Jim Furyk type, the steady Eddie that doesn't hit it very long. That's why they're in the field, because they have a chance. Or it's just –
yeah, it's a guy Trey Mullenix or something will win this.
Exactly.
Alex Smalley will put together yes. 72 holes, the best of his life. And
dude,
somehow,
that's all those guys are looking for. That's why they're in this event. Guys that just got their tour card, mm-hmm. they're looking at that field saying, there's no DeChambeau, there's no Koepka. I got to get out there and tee it up. I'll fly the 12 hours, but I got to get out there and try to win that event.
Yep. This is the one. You're right. Because it's weird. They're all playing there last week. Why wouldn't, like, if you're Justin Thomas, why not stick around and play?
Yeah. Like, you're out in Hawaii. Just play one more week.
Play
another
week.
Went all that way.
None of them do it. Like, all the big boys. John Rahm, no. He was this close to victory. He's like, I'm leaving. He hasn't played in 4 months or something like that. Two and a half, 3 months competitive golf. Plays one tournament and then decides, I'm done. Fat enough.
They don't need the money, fellas. Must be nice.
Don't. Yeah, the big boys don't. You're right. And, you know, they're getting into prime time now. Like, in the next couple of weeks, they'll get to California, and you're going to be at Torrey Pines soon, and Pebble, and the Waste Management, and
Can't
Riviera.
Wait.
And
Can't
it's
wait.
It's go time, man. It is go time. All right, Dave, great seeing you, buddy. Thank you for
Good
doing this.
Good seeing you guys.
There's Dave Festuck of The Star. We're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games. We're back tomorrow at?
If it's cold, Hazy B, you know what to do. 4 p.m.
I absolutely do. We'll chat then.